Good evening, everyone. I'm glad to be back for another edition of the Where Eagles Dare podcast with Leon Tubby. You can follow us on Facebook Live or YouTube. YouTube, we are on here every week, as well as Twitch. 5 o'clock Eastern, every Wednesday, breaking down the Eagles games from the week before and previewing the upcoming games. Just want to let everybody know you can also find Lee and Tubby's Where Eagles Dare podcast on just about now all of your podcast providers. We're talking Spotify, sure. We're talking Amazon Music, we're talking Stitcher, we're talking Audible, we're now on Apple podcast as well, and another one called Pocket Cast. I'm working on getting us on three more, so we're everywhere right now. So yeah, it's Lee and Tubby here, and I will say, we're glad to be back, but maybe not under these circumstances,
right?
Because things didn't go so well this week for the Eagles. It, you know, could have gone either way, and it didn't go our way, so unfortunately. But it is what it is. Right. We ended up losing, and we have to... We can't always do the podcast when there's joyous... when there's joyous situations.
Just wins. Yes. About to change the podcast to just wins.
Exactly. Well, I don't want to pick on this team, but with that, we may only do like 3 or 4 podcasts a year. I don't know. Look, they drove me to drink, Tubby. They drove me to drink. This week, I said, you know what? I'm going to have some scotch. I got my Glenmorangie out here in my Eagles scotch glass. I haven't abandoned them. I'm just...
Right on.
I'm toasting their... the game and looking forward to Dallas week. So
you should have let me know.
What? Oh, you're going to get some out too?
Nah, you should have let me know, man. I could have poured up. I got a little tequila upstairs. I could have poured up, you know, to celebrate this somber moment with you when the Eagles lost. Nobody's excited about that.
It was a last-minute decision to go ahead and do the drink thing. I was like, it is what it is.
Friends don't drink alone.
Well, I'm not, actually. I'm right here with you, but, you know.
I got you.
It's all good. But, yeah, so.
Right on.
Rough week. We talked a little bit before going live about the game, and I can tell today is going to be a fun podcast,
right?
Because we've got a little bit of a difference of opinion, not much, mm-hmm. on why the Eagles lost this particular game to the 49ers. But what we're going to do is break down the highlights quarter by quarter, and then we'll get into specifics and kind of decide, hey, what happened to the Eagles on Sunday when they faced the 49ers at home. So let's start with quarter number one. It was a good start to the game.
I
was very pleased with how that went, except for the Rager touchdown being called back. I had a lot of hope. We looked like we were picking up right where we left off after the Falcons. One thing I'll say that excited me and I think really affected the 49ers in the first quarter, and I watched it back again today, it was the crowd noise.
Yeah.
When the crowd noise coming out, first game in the link, a full house at the link since COVID started. You know, these people were chomping at the bit for some Eagles football, and they did not disappoint in the first quarter. And I think it really had a big impact on Garoppolo, because he couldn't hear. He was overthrowing receivers. They couldn't communicate to one another, and it really fired up the Eagles defense. And I think that helped us out quite a bit.
Yeah. You know, I like the Eagles. I thought they played well in the first quarter. You come out, you get your field goal, and you know, you're one another mental mistake away from being up 10-0.
Right.
On a team that's more of a veteran squad than you are, more experienced quarterback on their team, more experienced coach, with everything going their way, the Eagles still had the opportunity to come out 10-0. And for a young squad, that's still promising. You just wish, you know, you always want to have those back, but you hate mental errors like a guy pushed you out of bounds with one arm. It's like, yeah. Come on, man. Rager, you have to practice that. You can't be pushed out with one arm.
No.
You can't be pushed out one arm to stop a touchdown, especially when you have a guy beat So yeah, man, that sucks to not get those, that six right there, man. It was a really, I think that was one of the key misses. All misses. You get a touchdown call back. That's a key miss. You're taking points off the board. Yeah, I just wished we would have executed that play a little bit better. But overall, you know, the Eagles had the edge in that first quarter. Garoppolo couldn't get going.
Yeah, and like you said, the play was a beautiful pass by Hurts. It couldn't have been right. Put on the money better. Rager, right. if he just keeps his feet just an inch or two more to the left, we're talking 10-0, like you said, 10-0.
Just knowing where you're at. Where's your awareness at here?
I know.
Knowing where you're at in the field.
And I think that, you know, Sirianni addressed that after the game and said that that's just something we got to work on. And, it's his second year, so, you know, let's give him the benefit of the doubt and let them work with him on it. But it does hurt. Also, what hurt was, like, the first possession, you know, getting a PI on Norman, furthering the drive, and then we end up running three straight plays to Sanders. Mm-hmm. And while I normally don't have a problem with that, what I did when I watched the game back today, I watched and saw how they lined up almost the same formation each time. They did the same type of handoff. There was no fakes. There was no disguising what they were going to do. And the 49ers just sat back and went, stop, stop. I mean, to me, it reminded me like playing Madden with somebody who just runs the ball all the time. Runs the same play, and they're just hoping. Yeah, it runs the ball on first, second down. But then what surprised me was that they went for it on third and six. And I think that, you know, early in the game, maybe you're trying to set a tone, but third and six at that point on the field, I don't know where a run up the middle to Sanders, who's already only gained 4 yards on first and second down, was going to benefit you if you're going to catch him off guard. I heard in the press conference, Sirianni said they gave us a lot of looks and they fooled us. So we thought we had that one on the first down. And I'm like, dude, that's what football is. It's strategy. Right. So if you're saying that, that kind of alarms me that, you know, hey, they fooled us with looks. That's football.
I can see that being the case if it was the fourth quarter and, hey, they've been giving us this look all game. So we thought we had to run. But in the first quarter, it's unjustified.
Yeah,
they couldn't have shown you that much. They only had two possessions second possession at this point or whatnot.
Exactly. But
the fact of the matter is you got to throw the ball there. You know, yeah. I thought you know you got to trust your quarterback there to run up the middle. That run was just a poor play call, especially the field position that you're in. You know, if you throw the ball, you get a 10-15 yard pass. You're at their 40 now potentially.
Exactly.
You know? And now you're right there in field goal range, and you're still driving again. So it was a few mistakes here and there. You know, disappointing play call for sure on a third and six there in the first quarter.
And you know, so
you want to be more aggressive early in the game, in my opinion.
Right, exactly. And lucky for us, like I said, the defense was playing lights out, so they get us the ball right back, and then we come down the field on that series with the Rager TD that was called back. And what I noticed is our offensive line was really effective at run blocking, but they were bringing up the blitz. And whenever they dialed up the blitz to Hurts, like you saw in that one play where he missed Devontae Smith, or he just went tunnel vision on Devontae Smith. If you really look at that play, you can see Goddard peels off and he's standing all by himself at the first down marker.
Right.
But because of the pressure in Hurts's face, because I'm not going to say he missed the read completely. It was there and he missed it, but he had pressure coming right in from the corner blitz, coming right in his face. Nobody picked it up. Nothing you could see. It was just a great play. So he overthrew Devontae Smith. A little bit more awareness. Maybe he throws that ball to Goddard. I do think that that one of the things that we might have to look at Hurts is that he doesn't seem to like going to Goddard and Hurts as much as our former quarterback did. Mm-hmm. And that could hurt us down the road.
You know, I think what you're speaking to could be just a relationship thing, you know, with Smith and Hurts, you know, college buddies, they probably go in the huddle. Hey, man, just throw me the ball. I'm beat this guy. Hey, that happens, man. You get in the huddle, play football. You know, I play quarterback myself. I got guys, Bird, just throw the ball. Just throw the ball. And you're just like, yeah, but you're double covered. There was a few situations, even in that first quarter. I would argue even on the pass interference to Smith was a forced ball over to Smith. He was tightly covered. You know, he threw a ball that, you know, only Smith could catch, but it's still if you throw that ball wrong in that tight cover, that's a pick six there on that third and six. It's a very, when you throw into an island, You want to be sure. So we got lucky there. It was incomplete, but you know he did hold Smith on that one. So it was definitely a legit call.
Right.
But yeah, man, just overall, I think him having a rapport with Smith beforehand, I think we're going to find that to be a problem, not a problem, which is, when you have a favorite receiver, it's your favorite receiver. Every quarterback has one. And this is Hurts' favorite receiver now. So we're going to have to deal with a little bit of forced throws, but your check downs should come from to your tight end, especially in the Eagles offense with Ertz and Goddard. Your safety blanket should almost be instinctively to just go right to your tight end. To still look for that play downfield. Yeah, but hey, it's young moves. It's a first year starter type of decisions that he made.
Yeah, I see the same thing. And the thing with Devontae is that he was great in the Falcons game. And in this game, there was a lot of passes that were forced his way, and he just didn't come up with them. Either they were overthrown or underthrown. And it was a shame because his stat line is not that good. So you have to start looking at, if that's your favorite guy, if you go to those tight ends, like you said, and you do those checkdowns, even the Gainwell out of the backfield like you saw in that first quarter, that will open up Devontae down the field. But when they know that's where you're going, that's who they're going to be covering. And there was a lot of double coverage on Devontae, and so things didn't work out. Let's talk about this, the second quarter. It couldn't have gone any worse. Let's just be honest with it. You know, we come out of the Quez Watkins situation, and we get down there, and we get the PI. We didn't even have it in the highlights there. You get the PI on Norman again, putting the ball on the first and goal from the one. Mm-hmm. And they don't quarterback sneak.
Right. It was bad. You know what it reminded me of? Not the fact that they didn't quarterback sneak there. Did you lose yardage? Did you see the Florida game this weekend, Florida-Bama?
I saw some of it, yeah.
Caused that at the end. They're about to, I think, go up or tie Bama. And they do the same thing Jalen and Sanders did. None of them would let go of the ball. It was just this weird thing where they were just attached to one another. Mainly I'm speaking to that third down play there, where it's the RPO, or I don't know what it is. You just see Hurts holding the ball and Sanders holding the ball, and they're just running to the side for 5 or 6 yards. And it's just like, what is going on here? Like, nobody's making the decision. Nobody's being definitive. Nobody's taking the lead on who's going to score this ball. And then you come back with a Philly special, and it's just kind of like they read it. You know, shout out, you know, hey, props to the San Francisco defense from there. If I give them any props, it would be on that, to shut that Philly special down. Hurts was picked up really well. That corner picked him right up. Like, they saw the play coming. They picked that up really well. But this one was on Sirianni, man, with the play calling. We've established that Hurts is our biggest back.
Right.
You're on the 1 yard line. Just see what he can do, just like Garoppolo.
Yeah.
You know, when they had to win the one, you see Jimmy G taking the quarterback sneak to get the 1 yard here and there. I think we have a better option in Hurts than they do, and we should have used that there for sure. Yeah. I think we outsmart ourselves, and this just shows that we don't really have an identity yet, which is hard to expect out of a young team to establish identity. I think they're just working. It's just another growing pain. And it's something that we cleaned up later on in the game, which I was happy about. So moving forward, I was happy with the changes that we made in those situations going forward in the game. So that is a plus from a young coach and quarterback. Yeah, man. What do you think, man?
Well, like you said, you know, we're coming down. It's the second quarter. We've had the Rager TD called back. We've got 3 points on the board when we probably should have 10 at this point. They nail the punt down on the 3-4 yard line. And instead of doing the typical thing, and I'll give them credit, it's typical thing coming out and trying to run the ball and clear the way for your punter, they go deep to Watkins, and it's a beautiful play. Maybe if he doesn't stiff arm, he gets in, who knows. He did. I don't think he felt he could, so he turns around and tries to stiff arm, and he goes down. We end up getting a false start, moves the ball back a little bit, but then we get the PI on Norman for another grabby grab, and then the series went, like you said, they tried to roll and it was incomplete. Tried it, Hurts rollout. And then Sanders gets stuffed. And then the horrible option play. So like I said, you had two plays there from the one before Sanders got stuffed. The second down, they got stuffed. And they didn't do a quarterback sneak on either one. They tried to roll out on the first down. And then Sanders tried to run a him second down. He ended up losing yards to like the 3. And then it was gone. Now you can't quarterback sneak. So then they try that horrible option, and you can't even say how bad that was, because while it worked in the first quarter, where they used the wide side of the field, they caught the defense napping. This time they were not napping, and then it just Hurts had nowhere to go. He gets shoved out of bounds, and then the Philly unspecial was just it was maybe not a bad idea, but if you look at it on tape and compare it to the Philly special from the Super Bowl, it's horribly executed. All of the handoffs were done near the center. So your defensive backs didn't even have time to get sucked in, because literally Hurts turns around, hands the ball to Sanders, who gives it right back to, was it Watkins? Mm-hmm. No, it was Ward. It was Ward. The Ward who was the
it was Ward.
It was Ward.
Yeah.
So what ends up happening? So he gives the ball to Sanders, and all happens within a matter of seconds. There was no, like, and if you look at the Philly special, you see how the play develops and how Foles had time to leak out.
Right.
You know, as Trey Burton gets the ball. So all of that gave time for the Patriots to actually go to the right side of the field and left Foles wide open. On this time, you gave him no time, and it was just done. Bang, bang, bang. And it was so bad.
Yeah.
It was horrible.
I think in general, when you compare the Philly special, the Philly special to what we tried this week, I think the glaring difference is people are always paying attention to Hurts on our offense. Mm-hmm. When you have Nick Foles, 6'6", not really going to run for many yards. He comes up and taps you see him come up to the line and tap the guard or the tackle. You're not really bringing in what's going on. But every time you see Hurts move on our offense, somebody is picking him up.
Right.
He's the most dangerous person on our offense overall. So, and if you watch the Falcons game, when he had a lot of time with rolling out, and he just, his pocket presence is stepping up. I think they made it a point to make sure that, hey, let's not get killed by Hurts this week. Let's make them throw the ball around. They got, they have small backs. Let's keep hitting them and make them pick up the blitz. And you see, we can put a lot of pressure on Hurts. But I thought overall, man, just a bad play call in general. It's sneaky because you don't expect the ball to go to Foles. It's not sneaky when you can expect the ball to go to Hurts. So there's no sucking. They think that makes it, even when Tom Brady dropped that ball in the Super Bowl for us, it's because nobody expects the ball to go to him. That's why they look so wide open.
Oh, yeah.
And Hurts is not that guy in this case. everybody's looking for him to have the ball.
Yeah, and that's another factor in it. It's another factor. And just in the fact that they basically all the handoffs occurred within a millisecond of each other, it gave no time for the fake to even work. But the point you make is excellent, because, they're always going to look at Hurts as a potential threat out of the backfield if he doesn't have the ball.
Right.
And I think, I make a good point. They were determined not to let Hurts beat them with his arm. They didn't have as much of a problem, or they did have a problem containing his legs, but they did want to cover his pass. And so they knew they had a weakness at DB. We talked about it last week when we did the preview. I really expected that to be exploited, but what I didn't expect is to see guys like Lenore stay blanket covered. Now, Norman, he's a vet. He does grab, but he stayed in coverage well too. And so they got a better production out of their DBs than I expected. And it did make a difference to Hurts as far as his pass game goes. But he did have a great game on the run. It's just that when you fail there and you give the ball to them right before the half, and we let them come all the way down the field, and like we were talking about, is they weren't even at midfield and there was still 26 seconds left.
26 seconds.
And they weren't even at midfield. But what they were doing was what they saw was a weakness. They were doing the little screen passes to Kittle, giving the ball to Juszczyk, pitch passes to Mitchell, getting the ball moved down the field. Then when they got to midfield, they saw both of our linebackers playing a little bit up, Singleton, and I believe the other one was Wilson. And these guys, I'm just going to say right now, they didn't make a play the entire game. I saw Singleton maybe make a couple of tackles, but most of the time they were making tackles well beyond the line of scrimmage. They were either overplaying the screens or getting completely blocked out immediately. And so when Deebo Samuel comes over and crosses two linebackers and they don't even put a hand up to stop that pass. There's no awareness there. He catches the ball, runs it down to near the goal line, and then the next play afterwards, again, everybody goes with Kittle. You had four on that line of scrimmage, on that touchdown play for the 49ers, you had four guys in that area, and all four of them went with Kittle. Now, if you're not in the film room this week asking for explanations on why did you not go with Jennings and you went with Kittle and you left him wide open at the goal line right before the half, I would love to hear their answers to some of these guys. Why they? I get what Kittle is. I get what he gives you, and I know that that's who you think that he's going to go to. But four guys? Oh, that's just crazy.
I know I'm a homer. I know I'm biased. But if you look at the Watkins non-touchdown, I think it's one of the longest plays to not score a touchdown. Mm-hmm. And then you take the Rager stepping out in that first half. I mean, we're talking, Greg, about 17-0 potentially. Maybe 17-7. We're talking 26 seconds left. Is the first 26 seconds left in the first half is the first time we felt threatened by the Niners the entire first half. Right. It was that drive. 26 seconds to go. If you're in the Eagles, if you're in the stands, you're thinking, we're going to go in here 3-0 at the half. And 26 seconds, and all of a sudden, one play. Basically, they made those. So with the one plays we're talking about where Watkins doesn't score, you know, Samuels does make that catch and does get him down there. And you know, and they just executed better than us, man, when in those key moments. It's like, but overall, I think the Eagles played. I mean, when you go down at the half, it's hard to say you played better. But if you really look at the game, man, I don't, you know, the 49ers didn't show me a lot until 26 seconds left into the first half. It was a lot of three and outs from Jimmy G and the boys, man.
You're right on point. The Eagles did hold them to no first downs in the first quarter. And and then in the second quarter, they actually were able to get them to stop them again on their only series before the one touchdown. But they did move the ball a little bit. I think that what killed, I honestly say that's right. What killed us was the momentum shift that takes place when we get the field goal blocked, you get the Quez come down, and then you go for it on fourth and you don't get it. And then they come down and score. So we're talking, that's 10 points we left on the field. We should have been up 17-0.
That's why I said seven.
We're down 7-3.
That's exactly what I said, 17-0. So now it's 7-3 at the half. Yeah. That's why it's hard for me to be so hard on them that first half. Because I'm just like, man, a regular Hill and a Watkins just getting one more step, or maybe that ball being thrown one more yard out in front of Watkins so he can have, you know, so he doesn't have to stop in stride at all. He just goes, because I don't think nobody can catch him necessarily, but I think the way the ball was thrown, he was only maybe a half a step and two corners that are fast too. So if you're running with the ball, you're trying to beat two guys. Most of the time, one of those guys can catch you being that close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's not on Quest. That's not on Quest at all. Like I said, he might
have. Hell of a play by him.
Yeah, it was amazing. Great. It was, again, like you said, the longest play in the NFL this season, and it was the longest Eagles pass reception since 2010. That was the only Eagles pass play of that long to not score any points.
And so the rest of them came from DeSean Jackson.
Yeah, that was actually 2010 was DeSean Jackson, I believe, against the Dallas Cowboys. So when I looked that up today. So, yes, that was pretty interesting. So what sucked was, you know, going into half, we're like, okay, it sucks. We're up seven or down 7-3 and things look bleak, but we got a whole second half to play. So let's pick it up in the third quarter. Little, not much of anything, to be honest with you, but
and you look, that old quarter still was a nothing quarter, 0-0 quarter, like you mentioned. Mm-hmm. Not much going on there, but you did get to see the 49ers get a little more comfortable. Mm-hmm. Like you said, 16 plays. I mean, sheesh. And then that's pretty harsh on everybody around, and it takes us away from our strengths, which is continuing to rotate our line and get pressure. Now we're through three or four rotations, and all our guys are gas. 16 plays is a lot, man. But I just think Gannon, you know, he pitched a shutout corner. At the end of the day, no points were given up in that quarter. Take 26 seconds. You take at this point, right, we're at the end of the third quarter. You take 26 seconds in the end of the second and nothing in the third. Man, you're calling a hell of a game as a defensive coordinator. You're calling a hell of a game. You gave up, you know, one play. You know, it's the NFL. I mean, these guys are professionals as well on the other side of the ball. So it's just really hard for me to be. I have no smoke for Gannon this week. I'm gonna save the smoke for when it's needed. Yeah, when it's needed. It's hard for me to have a young team and have the veteran expectations for them. And I think they're doing. I think they're doing incredibly well on the defensive side right now. I really do. I think our problems are with the offense. Executions, throwing the double coverage to Smith, as you saw. That long ball, you got pressure in your face, you're still throwing in the double coverage to Smith. He's not a 6'4 receiver. That's not Mike Evans out there. That's not, you know, he's not mossing a lot of folks. So
that's
really a 50-50 ball. It's less than a 50-50 ball. You got two guys on him, and he's 6 foot.
Yeah.
So you're asking for an interception or a bad play to come from that. So we got lucky on a lot of those plays.
So going back to Gannon, here's my thing. I don't dislike what he's doing. It's hard to argue with, like you said, we barely gave up any points to Atlanta, didn't give up any touchdowns. And in this game, up until the fourth quarter, they were, you know, they only put up 7 against us. But my problem is twofold. And I don't put it solely on him. I put it on the personnel that he has to work with on the defensive side. But number one, the lack of blitzing. It was evident that when they put Garoppolo under pressure, he made erratic throws. It was shown there in the third quarter, but yet they didn't sustain that. They kept going with the four-man front, and when they do bring a man up in the linebacking core, they usually back him out in coverage. They just bring him in as a look, and I think the 49ers got comfortable when they realized, okay, they're not going to blitz us. The other problem I have is, it goes back to Schwartz, is that sticks defense, and I'll show you in the fourth quarter one of the plays that I looked at is one of the biggest examples that makes me fearful. It makes me doubtful. I don't want to hate on them yet, but I do see red flags. And so when I was watching the game back today, I saw a lot of red flags. I saw a lot of Jim Schwartz bend but don't break. Because my thing is the reason I don't like that, I would rather have a team score on me within 2 minutes than to give up a 16-play, 9-minute drive and have them score on me. Just get
Schwartz
it over
gave up
with.
Both. Well, yeah, Schwartz gave us both.
But if you look at you look up at Schwartz, you really if you man. Look at if you look at his career, and one of the things that he was able to keep a job was he didn't give up a lot of points. He gave up like that one. Remember the game against the Tennessee Titans a couple years ago, where we were leading going into the fourth quarter. We only lost that game like 22-16. It was some weird score like that. But it was that play where he put everybody back like 15 yards off the line of scrimmage, and they threw a little flat pass, and the guy ran right by everybody in that sticks defense, and you end up losing that game. And there was like 4 or 5 games that year where Schwartz only lost like 20-17 or something like that, but he always gave up time of possession. It's really frustrating when you lose the time of possession battle because your defense can't get off the field. And here was a big thing that I noticed in the fourth quarter. Because of this, because the defense can't get off the field, they're gassed. They're not playing with intensity anymore. And then everything started to fall apart. So I do respect the fact. I'm not trying to belittle the fact that they only gave up 17 points in this game and 6 to Atlanta. We know Atlanta's not very good. And even Tampa Bay, who's could be considered a much better defense than ours, gave up more points than we did.
Way more.
Yeah. So I get that. I get that. I'm just saying that I have little red flags poking up that I'm hoping that they take care of. Now, the second thing that I have is not just the scheme. It's the personnel. It's the linebackers. Our linebackers of Avery and Wilson and Singleton are not going to beat anybody. And the fact alone that in most cases they only go with 2 linebackers instead of 3 anyway shows you that they're staying with a kind of nickel. But the problem with that is it gets you run on. Teams will see that and take advantage of that in the run. I think the Cowboys will coming up this week too. So my big thing is that the Eagles and Howie Roseman have never valued the linebacker, and it shows. And it's a big problem because we don't have guys like Micah Parsons and Vander Esch that they have in Dallas. We don't have a Bobby Wagner that can just control the line of scrimmage. Or Fred Warner here in San Francisco. There's so many of these guys, Roquan Smith, to say that you don't value that position. We went through an entire, like the last 2 drafts, we don't draft a single linebacker in the first 5 rounds. To me, that's ridiculous, especially when there's a need. And I don't know why the philosophy is. Now, maybe Gannon will change that next year because they were new coming in. and they didn't draft. And maybe with all these draft picks that we're going to be getting next year and the salary cap, our salary cap coming down a little bit, maybe that changes. So I'm hopeful that that will be fixed. But I don't think these three guys, and then even TJ Edwards and all the backups, are going to do it for us at that position. It's clear that we're going to have to mask that issue going forward, because that's going to be an issue all year long, is the middle of our pass coverage and our ability to stop the run past the front four. And that's where I'm most concerned.
Yeah, we definitely don't have a presence at linebacker. You see, every time I see Hicks make a good play for the Cardinals, I'm like, man, we really let go of Jordan Hicks, because he was able to, he was not just a good, he was a solid tackler, but his size, his height, he would get those interceptions across the middle. You know, he would kind of, if he dropped back into that zone as a middle linebacker, he would, especially on the goal line and in red zone situations, you know, he would jump, get a lot of pads, made some plays for us. So every time I see him, he was like the last good one we have besides like the old guys. But as far as young guys coming in, Hicks was our probably the better young guy that we had recently enough. But other than that, you're right, man. I look at our linebacker core. I'm not inspired. You see a lot of missed tackles on that play. You see when they are running the ball up the line, whether it's Jimmy G for a sneak or what have you, or just 16 play in general, we don't have that hitter.
Right.
You know, Eagles are known for having that guy on offense that's going to lay the wood. And right now we don't have that guy on our defense that's going to lay the wood, man. So you see, you know, them just growing into identity.
Yeah.
But like I said, with such a young team, I'm going to remain optimistic with them.
They're you're right. They're undersized. They don't have the strength. I mean, God love them. They have the intensity, but they just don't make the tackles. They can't. You got Singleton on Kittle, where you saw where he missed the tackle there.
That's a mismatch.
Yeah. I mean, granted, that's an oak tree going up against a willow. I mean, the guy's going to get past you. He's going to bully past you, but he's got to hold him up a little bit there. He's got to go to the legs. He's got to do whatever he can. I'm, of course, here I am behind a mic talking about how easy it is.
Right.
But,
and Kittle wants smoke.
Yeah, exactly.
But you got to bring it when you tackle Kittle, because he wants smoke with you. So he's not going to go down. He wants the violence. He wants it. You see, when he makes a good block, he loves it. So you got to bring it, period, when you're going up against a guy like Kittle. And he didn't have the juice.
Right. But as an Eagle fan, that's like what you just said. We're talking about Jordan Hicks. That's what makes it hurt so much, is because I want Jeremiah Trotter. I'm going to talk like Brian Dawkins right now. I want Jeremiah Trotter out there. I want Seth Joyner out there. I want these guys that used to, like you said, lay the wood on people, that used to establish dominance over the middle. You didn't go over the middle because you were like, well, like Ray Lewis when he was going to kill you. You went over the Lewis. Absolutely. Went over the middle over Ray Lewis. Tom Brady, they just had a commercial recently where he talked about how he never passed to his wide receivers over the middle when they were playing the Ravens, because he knew Ray Lewis was going to take him out.
Bad business decision.
We got no one
with him. There's no accountability across the middle. So they can, I just imagine, and we'll move on to the four, but I can just imagine a quarterback lining up and they're looking at the line. And as they're surveying, they go, we got good corners. Yeah, safety's a solid. Line is monstrous. But who are these guys?
Exactly.
In the middle linebackers. We'll just go there. And that's just where they run. There too, until we have guys starting to cheat over to help our linebackers, and then we get exploited somewhere else.
Right.
And that's where you have the Kittles play, or you know, that second quarter where you say, "Why are they all going to Kittles?" It's like, and then Jennings sneak out because they're trying to help the linebackers.
Exactly.
So they're extra worried about Kittle because if they already have weak linebackers, and then that's a good play call. It's good scheme on Shanahan's part there. But yeah, man, just a dud of a third quarter. Nothing really going there.
No, and forth. But going into the fourth, so talk about the fourth quarter. Going into the fourth, the 49ers are up 7-3 still, as it was at half. And right now they're on the 41-yard line, and they're facing 3rd and 7 in this drive that started all the way back near their goal line. This touchdown drive that it was, again, 16 plays, 9 minutes. Four guys on the line of scrimmage, a linebacker down here faking a blitz because he doesn't blitz. And then you've got the 49ers with two wide receivers here. We've got our two backs all the way 10 yards. They're actually one, you know, this is of course our safety, but he's also back all over 10 yards off the, and 2 yards off of where the first down marker is. This guy's where, and this guy backs up even further, which I think is Harris. And then you got Nelson down here, who's 10 yards off of his receiver. Do you think this is going to go any? This is going to be good for us. Right. We've seen this under Schwartz, and what their plan is I've heard Gannon say it: keep the ball in front of you. And what ends up happening is this is a key third down to keep the game 7-3. And what you do is you give all of the space up, all of the space up on the middle, and then when it goes, Mike Epps in coverage, and he's unable to make the play because he's coming up. And he wasn't in position to make the play because you put all your guys so far off the ball. You play it into Jimmy G's hands. You don't pressure. You expect your four guys to get there on a 3rd and 7, and then you don't play up on the receivers. So you give them all the space they need to make a play. That, to me, is when I talk about Gannon and the defense. That's the red flags that I'm concerned about. I don't want to see that at Dallas. I don't want to see CeeDee Lamb have 10 yards off the ball. I don't want to see Amari Cooper with 10 yards off the ball. They'll kill us. And I get that, they'll kill us by a death of 1,000 small cuts, but that's still getting killed. So if the Cowboys only score 21 points and we only score 6, we're still going to lose.
You know, Jimmy G takes that ball in the shotgun, so it's not like he can take a 3 or 5 step drop. Was disappointing when it comes to Epps in that position. I look like the defense – We're in a decent position. They knew they can meet him at the first down. They were only about a few steps, so they either had their heels on the first down if you were playing corner, if you were playing safety, or like they were in a dime. Like they had about 5 or 6 DBs out there, 6 DBs out there. So they're going to play off in general because you don't want to get washed by a lineman, a tackle. So they try to – it's a little happy medium where you don't want your small guys up there where the big uglies can get their hands on them. You know, if it's a running play and you're wrong, but if you sit back there and Jimmy G just really takes the ball and almost even if you blitz, I don't know if that helps there because he just fires it right across the middle. You know, he sees the gap. He's looking. He looks to the left, sees a couple guys, looks to his right, and he sees Epps just kind of in the middle. And he's like, I think I got a guy doing the post. I think I can get the ball there. I think if I throw the ball early enough,
right,
my guy can shield. Now he really just shield Epps. You know, so Epps can't really get to the ball. It's just an easy completion. You know, I'm not really sure what you did besides having better linebackers that can play that soft coverage there. But you know, it's a good execution by the Niners.
To me,
it's a really good point as far as the soft coverage.
To me, I'm more of a fan of a conventional defense where you at least keep one guy up on the line of scrimmage to chuck your best wide receiver. You keep the other guy about 5 yards off, not 10 yards off, so that if it's a slant that he can stay with him. When you're 10 yards off the ball, and this is my biggest problem with that defense, and it was under Schwartz, is that it takes you a while to get going because you're not running at the snap. You're waiting. You're waiting for something to happen, and that's the bend but don't break. It is... Let them catch the ball in front of us. Just don't let them get the first down. But the problem with that is that if you're standing behind the first down marker, they're going to get the first down. So it's tough for me because I'd like to see them. When you've got guys like Slay and Nelson on your corners, they don't have to be 10 yards off the ball. They can chuck these guys at the line. Maybe our linebackers can't cover the slot receiver. Yeah. But then if you bring in your nickel – and you use these guys like you've got Devontae Maddox and Kevon Wallace and Epps, you know, cycling in and out. Or even you can bring Harris up from the safety position to make those coverage calls. I'm just really surprised that our coverage was bad in this game to give up those little plays like that because it was death by 1,000 cuts. Because when you look at the actual stats, it reflects that is that they just took little dinks and dunks and little cuts the whole game. And those hurt really bad. But, you know.
And I really expected a lot of that from the 49ers. I expect them to do something. That's why it's hard for me to burn a lot of calories on our defense. Mm-hmm. It's just mainly because, you know, 17 points, few drives here and there. That's going to happen in professional football with a veteran team. It's expected. I think our problems are with our offense stagnation. Not executing our plays and a few bonehead plays here and there. Like you can't, you know, the Barnett play. I don't know if that was on one of the replays, but the Barnett play was one of the, that was a really big momentum swing for our defense. But like every time we had him in third down, something goofy would happen. and it was just extending the drive. And then you mentioned that the corners playing off the ball. I'm just thinking, if I'm a defensive coordinator, my guys have been out there all day. If I play them presser, man, if they get beat and they're already tired, it looks really bad. I'm already bringing McLeod up. You see McLeod bringing up the beats on man. So it's hard when you bring a safety up and you are asking that safety to play man coverage. It's really hard to ask your corners to also play man coverage because they don't have any help. And football is about help. These guys are fast, man. It's hard to hold anybody one-on-one. You have very special corners like Revis Island and Sherman mm-hmm. and those guys and Dion. Oh, yeah, those are special guys. The rest of it is help.
Right.
So if you're asking for help, fourth quarter, you know your guys have been on the field all game. I'm not sure if I'm a defensive coordinator, I probably play half of the coverage. I'm not sure if I go to the line on them because I definitely don't want to get beat deep because the game is over. I can't, you know, it could be irreparable right. damage mm-hmm. if I come up and Jimmy just get lucky. He's already in the shotgun. So he can see all these things. He's already in the shotgun, so yeah. He can see it. So I'm just trying to look at that play. You know, I see Jimmy G. I'm just trying to see what he's looking at. He's like, man, this play over the middle is easy. It's not nobody. It's really hard for Epps to make that play unless he anticipated, comes up, and, you know, almost sells out to make that particular stop. But I think at that point, it's hard to bring your corners up. I really do, especially when you're asking your safety to play almost man coverage. And I think at that point, we were pretty gassed. And that was just more of a tired play from Epps, just not being able to cover, just on our heels. And it's just one more play where we're on our heels. I thought the Niners executed well there. But, you know, still that Eagles bias, you know, even when the whistle was blown at 17-11, I texted like, hey, we're still in it.
Yeah,
we're still in it. When they came out and scored that touchdown, was the most energy I've seen from the Eagles all game. That first drive, even when Hurts made that big run,
mm-hmm.
you can see like he's pumped up. The guys are moving. They're energetic. They're really trying to come back in this game. That was like one of the best drives. And from an energy perspective, from just seeing them come out, line up, how they're breaking the huddle, the confidence that they had a lot of confidence on that play, man. And you know, I hate to say this, but I just feel like the Eagles blew that game, man. I you know, it's so hard for me to praise the Niners did what they needed to do, and you always got to respect the team that comes in and gets the win,
right?
It just gets the win. But as far as impressive, the Niners weren't impressive. I think the Niners look worse as a team because of their struggles with the Eagles. I think the Eagles look dangerous because you take a Falcons team that we held 6 points, and you take the Super Bowl champs, right? You take a defense that shut down the great Patty Mahomes in the Super Bowl, and these guys can't almost – it was a close game at one point with that Falcons game. So it's like, you know, it's really hard to judge, man, at this point. Man, our guys are giving us a mixed bag. I think 1-1 – is respectable for a young team. I think 1-1 is legit. I think 1-1 is where I almost expected us to be. I can see us, you know, we have a whole new coaching staff. For us to, you know, for me to expect them to go undefeated, to step out, is unrealistic. So I think 1-1 right now, I'm like, okay, this is, you know, it's kind of what I expected. You know, I have a first year coach, you know, and all of those things that go along with it, and just how young our squad, how fragile our squad is. I think we can, I think we have a lot to build on, man. And the only way is up, man, because we've played some veteran teams back to back weeks. We played Matt Ryan and Jimmy G, two guys that have been to the Super Bowl. We played two Super Bowl quarterbacks back to back.
Right.
The guys that have went the length of the season. I'm not a Jimmy G fan. I think he sucks personally. I think he's terrible, in my opinion. I think he should praise the Eagles for their mental mistakes, those things that don't require skill. You know, like Nick talked about before, just fixing the things that don't require skill. For Barnett, a Super Bowl champion, to make such a rookie mistake like that, that's not what a Super Bowl champion, somebody that covers, you recovered the sack of Tom Brady. You recovered the fumble recovery. Tom Brady. Now you out here in week two messing around, man, blowing the game for your team. You're doing really immature things. So I think the Eagles need to work on their maturity. and it's just the discipline, because we are a regular heel out from and a bad play call from Hurts or whatever, from really having the same points or even more that they had. I don't know. Niners showed us nothing. I think I'm not high on them going forward, especially with them losing all their running backs. So, you know, fly Eagles fly, even in the loss.
I'm totally with you on the fact that this is a young team and we can't expect them to be dominant as much as we would like them to. And it is good of what they've done in the first 2 weeks. Yeah, and I agree with all that. And you're right about Barnett, because if the Eagles, even if that ball goes out of bounds and they don't recover that fumble, the ball's dead right there. And yet he gives them an extra 15 yards. So the other thing is two things I want to talk about at the end of the game before we move on to the stats and get out of this game is that the Kevon Wallace thing, I looked at that three or four times, and he lowers his head, but Trey Sermon hits him in the shoulder with his head and gets a stinger. And yet they get flagged for that. That was a fumble. Yeah. That was a legit fumble. So that hurt right there. And that was just a little bit of a, you can't help that. And then the big thing was at the end of the game there was when they needed a third down and they were going to go for that quarterback sneak, is the time reading double zeros and Jimmy G standing there for another second and no call on the delay of game. Now, maybe our clock that we saw on the TV coverage was different than the clock in the stadium. We don't know. I'm just guessing. But if we're going off that's the same clock, that should have been delay of game. And that also happened in their touchdown. Their second touchdown was it was delay a game right before he threw it. And I saw it and I was like, okay, what the hell? I mean, what are you doing? It's double zero. So
our guys were standing straight up. Did you notice that? Yeah. It's like you look at that touchdown, Hargraves, 97, our defensive tackle, he's standing straight up. Our guys saw double zero and almost stood up out of the play. That's why if you watch, it was very easy. It was almost no resistance to the Niners when they scored that touchdown, because I think our guys relaxed for that because it was such a delay of game. It was delay of game. But you have to stay down. I don't like to see my defensive tackle standing straight up when a touchdown is being scored. I want him at the bottom of that pile trying to stop that. I want him at the bottom of the pile trying to stop that. So, yeah, man, sucks, but hey, I'm still optimistic.
We can't hang our hats on that, on just bad play calls, because they did play poorly offensively with the bad decision made. Like you said, it was so many bad decisions and missed opportunities that really crushes you as a fan when you have the potential to be up 17-0 and you're down 7-3 at half. That really sucks. One thing I did want to mention, though, as far as like players of the game for me, I know that in this type of situation, it's hard to say, oh, there's a player of the game for the Eagles. But I got to single out my boy again, Jordan Mailata. Australia rugby player coming in against Nick Bosa. One of the things that ended up happening was Nick Bosa was getting so handled by Mailata. It was that they rotated him over to the left side. And when he sacked Hurts and forced the fumble, they had Goddard and Stoll, the third tight end, on that side. And Nick Bosa lined up on them and blew by both of them in order to force that fumble that Stoll recovered. Yeah. And they did that because they could not get any penetration on that left tackle side with Nick Bosa, so they had to rotate him to the other side. I think he only got by Mailata once. So there's some things that happened to us in that game that did turn it around. When Brandon Brooks went out, that really did affect us on being able to contain the pass rush and being able to run the ball effectively. And then also when Graham went out, it was, I want to say it was right before the big drive in the third quarter. So, again, to go back to what you said, if you take all the arguments I made and throw them out the window, which you can do, it's your choice. But if you do have an argument to say that defense did start to fall apart and things did start to go the 49ers' way when our anchor. Now, we know Brandon Graham and Fletcher Cox and these guys that have been around, even Barnett, they're not making a lot of sacks, and they're definitely not forcing a lot of turnovers. We don't even have a turnover this season. The Eagles don't yet. Which is weird in two games. You'd think there'd be one. But we don't have a turnover the other way. So right now we're at zero plus minus on the turnover battle. But what they do is disrupt. And Graham and Barnett and Cox and Hargrave in there, they disrupt. And they force mistakes. They force incomplete passes. So when you lose the anchor of that line, it's going to hurt you going forward. So I do think that did affect them. So.
Yeah, 100%.
So looking at just real quick, looking at the stats after the game, we saw that the 49ers had 23 first downs to our 18. Big thing, third down efficiency was fair across the board, 6 of 14 and 5 of 12. Total plays 68-55, so they had a lot more plays than we did. Total yards, you see 300 yards. That should be passing yards. It shouldn't be just total yards. 306 49ers to 328 by the Eagles. They both had nine drives. Yards per play, this is where I was talking about the dink and dunk, was the 49ers had a 4.5 average per play.
It's Jimmy G special.
Yeah, exactly. Going on further here, we got the passing 189 yards, like you said, by Jimmy G to Hurts 177. What you don't really see is the Hurts had 82 yards on the ground, which makes a big difference.
And the bulk of his passing yards came on one play.
Yeah, true. 12 of 24 passing, which isn't great for our quarterback. We need a little bit more out of that. Garoppolo, 22 of 30. You go down here. Here's the biggest thing for me, because penalties, again, was a factor. Eight penalties for only 57 yards. But the problem, like we talked about, was they were key penalties in certain situations.
Timing.
Yes. Getting a PI near the goal line and giving them more yardage, or giving it to them on the goal line. And that may be only a 1 yard penalty, but that's a 7 point penalty in my eyes. So, because that gave them the ability to quarterback sneak it and get that second touchdown. So, eight penalties, definitely got to clean that up. They had 5 of 60, three more yards than we did. But here's the thing that frustrates me, is I think that you win this battle, the time of possession, you a lot of times you win the game. And Eagles only had 25 minutes of time of possession to the 49ers, 34. So you think, if you would have told me the Eagles are going to shut them out and only allow 7 points in the first half, that we're going to win the time of possession battle, that we're not going to even give them a first down in the first quarter, that we're going to win the time of possession battle. But yet, in that second half, those two excruciatingly long drives was a big problem for us to get back on the field and even have a chance to score. So that kind of stinks on that. But it is what it is. Jalen says in his press conference the same thing, is like that there were plays that they could have made, the Philly special being one of them, that didn't execute the way they needed to. The defense adapted to them, so they just didn't make those plays. Sirianni said a couple of things that, you know, kind of made me question where his head is at, but it's minor stuff. He said, when he was talking about the play itself, he said, well, if that play would have worked, nobody would have a problem with that we went for it on fourth down. But then it didn't. So now, you know, that we have to put that on ourselves and take responsibility for bad play calling. I'm like, dude, so you're apologizing for bad play calling, but what you're saying is, hey, had it worked, I'd have been a genius. So it's like, I'm still going to keep doing that. And the thing is about the going for it on fourth down, again, I get the Riverboat Ron type stuff. I get the gambler type mentality. I get Dougie P had that rep. I just want to win. I don't want to see you being reckless. I want to see if you get inside the 20, you walk away with at least three. You know, if it's 20 to 30 and you get a missed field goal or blocked field goal like we had, that Jake Elliott had, that's fine. But you get inside that 20, give me three, because those 3 points win the game. What doesn't win the game is getting all the way down there and coming away with zero. So I was kind of, you know, that kind of upset me about the press conferences, but I mean, I'm upset overall. Let's just be honest with you.
Absolutely.
You've known me for years. Man. I take losses hard. I take losses to the point where I have a bad week. Like the whole week. I don't start feeling good again until the weekend, because now I'm like, oh, wait, we got another chance to recover from it. It affects my whole freaking week when the Eagles lose. It's been that way since I was 9 years old. I can't do anything about it. It is what it is. So this one sucked really bad and it sucked even worse because they had chances to win the game. They had so many opportunities. Now we get over it.
We get over it and we move on.
Just a couple of things about what happened to some things that affect the Eagles in the league before we get into our next week's game. So two things that happened big for us as far as the upcoming draft. Tua Tagovailoa.
Tua's fine.
Tua. All right.
I'm good with Tua.
Tua is injured. So we're looking at Jacoby Brissett starting for Miami next week. Don't know how long Tua is going to be out. They don't think it's going to be a long time, but here's the problem. It is not really a problem. It's actually a blessing for the Eagles. If Miami, the lower they go, down the scale this year. If the worst record they have, we have their first round pick.
Really? Oh, that's right.
So
I didn't even think about that. I don't even remember that. That's a good call.
So with Tua being injured, that helps us. I don't wish anything against him. In fact, my son is a massive Dolphins fan, so I don't want to wish any ill will on Tua, but it does help us out. It does give us that first round pick. Also, Carson Wentz, our beloved former quarterback. I watched the Rams game today, and so this is 2 for 2. I've watched the games every week, and I watch it out of curiosity just to see how Wentz is going to do. And it's the same old Wentz over and over again.
Same Wentz.
The first drive he has, they go for it on fourth and goal, just like we did. Go for it on fourth and goal, and he gets sacked because he doesn't even try to get the ball out. He gets a lot of pressure, and he just folds up like a turtle. And then did you see the turnover at the goal line in the second quarter?
Absolutely,
when they had first and goal, and he tries a shovel pass, and he pitched it right to the Rams defender, right to him. Unbelievable.
The only thing you need to know about Wentz is how you hurt both your ankles at the same time. Both your ankles, bro. Both? Exactly. Both of them?
Yeah.
Both,
yeah.
You know, he is the epitome of what you call same soup, just reheated. He is the same thing. He is just reheated soup, man. It tastes the same. Same stuff. You're going to expect the same thing. Yeah. But when I saw the report, he hurt both
ankles.
His ankles.
He sprained.
I was like, look, man, this guy, bro, both.
I was like, was he playing Steph Curry in a pickup game? Or something? How do you sprain both ankles?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Fragile.
Yes.
Fragile.
So they're looking at he's going to miss, and they have nobody. I even forget the quarterback that came in to back him up. He went out, and actually the Colts had a chance to win the game, but not because of him. They got a fumble recovery on a messed up punt. A snap was bad by the Rams. It hit their running back who was standing in the way of the snap, and it went to the end zone. Colts recovered to make it a 21-14 game, and then the Rams came down and tied it, and then they end up with it. So Wentz had two decent touchdown drives in that game before he sprained both his ankles, and not much else. So he was – I hate to say it. I said it last week. I hate to say it because – he had such a great year in 2017, and I loved watching him play, and I thought he had some talent. But I watched this Rams game, and anybody gets a chance to go to NFL Game Pass and watch the 30-minute condensed replay of this game, you will see what I saw. There was so many times when Wentz is going down or getting sacked, and he just hurls the ball. It's dangerous. And he doesn't just hurl it. Sometimes he just flicks it. And I saw 3 or 4 times where the Rams could have had easy picks. He did it once at the goal line, but he did it 2 or 3 other times in the game too. I think what he's trying to do is be that Wentz from 17, but he doesn't have the same awareness, so he's being reckless. And that's I feel for him, and I feel for the Colts, but I want him to play. I want him to succeed, because this is unlike Tua going out and helping us. Wentz going out hurts us. Because the deal is, we get the Colts' first-round pick if he plays 75% or more of their snaps at the starting quarterback position. Or
it's a bad deal for us. That's a bad deal.
I know. Or it's a second-round. Or it's a second-round pick. Or the other part of the deal is if he plays 70% of the snaps and they make the playoffs, then we still get their first-round pick. Otherwise, we get a second. Mm-hmm. So it's one of those conditional deals. We get a second either way, but we want the Colts we want Wentz to play every week, and we want him to be successful, because then we get a first round pick, so it helps us. So anyway, that's what's going on with the rest of the league. We don't talk much outside the Eagles unless it affects the Eagles, and so that's why we brought up Wentz and Tua Tagovailoa, blah, 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 blah. So now...
It's not like we miss our old quarterback or anything like that. We're just talking about, you know, what we can get for him in the draft.
I don't miss him when I see him playing the way he's doing right now. I do enjoy seeing what Hurts is doing on the field. I think Hurts has got a lot to learn. We gotta admit, this is his first full year as a starter. Mm-hmm. And he's under a new system. Again, what is it, the fifth system he's been under since he was with Alabama? He's had so many different offensive coordinators and different systems. Yeah. So I am definitely giving him as much leeway as possible. I want him in there over Wentz right now based on what I've seen through week two.
Wentz is what you see in sports where the quarterback position is so fragile that you can have how one good year can carry you for a few into a whole nother contract as long as somebody believes in you. I think the main thing about Wentz is we know what he can do. But it's something about when that ball is snapped in Wentz's hand, he just doesn't make the right decisions, and he's always hurt. For such a big guy, everything hurts him. Yeah. Everything hurts him. So it's unfortunate for him, but we got hurts and we move.
Yeah, nice guy, and he has flashes. I've watched him make some great passes in that game against the Rams. I mean, they only lost by three, but it was still – not all due to him. They had that big turnover for a touchdown that the Colts had. So he only really technically allowed or was really only responsible for 14 points in that. And so, but he had a couple of good drives. But he's not the same ones from 2017. And that's, you know, what it is. What it is. We don't want to talk about our old girlfriends. Right. Talk about our new one, which is Hurts, and we love where he's at right now.
And she didn't even give us a ring. Our other girlfriend gave us the ring. Our other girlfriend got down and proposed to us, gave us the ring. I've been waiting on this my whole life. I've been waiting on this for 52 years for this ring.
Our side
piece. We're not even talking about the one that,
I would even call Nick our girlfriend. He's our side piece. He's a booty call. Nick was a booty call. Nick was always there when we needed him, you know, and it's late at night and we're all alone.
He has one of the greatest nicknames of all times in sports. Yes. I mean, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yep. You're going to have a nickname.
We're going to keep it clean for the children. But yes, Nick has one of the best nicknames all time in sports that no one's ever said on NFL Network. But if you're from Philly, you know what Nick's big,
everybody knows it.
Big nickname is. He has a very big nickname. So that brings us to this week. And here we go. It is now officially Dallas week. We've got the 49ers Dallas out of the way. Week. That's over now. And here's what we got for us, man. We got Dallas on Monday Night Football, AT&T Stadium.
Yes, sir.
It is this. I don't know. I'm going to ask you right up front. Do you think... I know it's only week three, and I'm going to do like they do on NFL Network when they ask stupid questions. Mm-hmm. Do you think this is a must-win for the Eagles right now?
No, I don't. I don't think it's a must-win only because Dallas lost week one. So I'm not going to put that pressure on them now. And with Dallas struggling against the Chargers, they struggled against the Chargers. I see if they were high octane, which we know they can get to the Cowboys. I don't know if this is a must-win. It'll be a nice win because as long as we split it, you know, we split the games between Dallas. We typically have a good year here or there. Nah, to answer your question, I don't think this is a must win. I think we will win, dude.
We'll get to that.
About you? You think this is a must win? How do you feel going into
this? I think it's an important win. I think, you know, like last year when we played them, we beat them at home last year and then we lost at our place at the end of the season. But I think that this is an important win, and it's an important game because it has to set the tone. We don't want, if Dallas beats us, and especially if they beat us well, if they beat us soundly, it's going to set the tone for them going forward. They're going to give them the keys to the division because I think both teams have a really tough schedule the entire way. No one in the East has a really easy schedule.
Right.
It's crazy when you look at all four teams and who they have to play this year. So we got to win the division games. And I think if we don't go in there and walk away, I don't even care if it's a field goal at the end. I don't care if it's a turnover. I think it is a tone setter because here's why. We got Kansas City after this and then Carolina with Sam Darnold, who's lighting it up right now.
Yeah.
For me, right now at this point in the season, if the Eagles don't win this game, you could very well be 1-4 going into week five. And that's not where we want to be. So, of course, I won't say it's a must win, but I'm saying it's a pretty damn important win.
And I 100%, I'm with you on that. I think it's an important game. And if it's a division game, they're all going to be important. You know, if it's because, you know, hey, you win a division, you go to the playoffs. So, I guess all our games, I guess, in our division, I guess you can consider them all like must wins.
Right.
Because they're tiebreakers and, you know, things like that. So they're all, but as far as the just being week three, I think must win sounds like panic. I agree. But I understand the context as well. So it's definitely an important game. And I think if we win this game, it puts us as the leaders of the division 100%. Because I think people think the Cowboys are the best in the division right now, which I don't.
It's tough. I still think we're in this kind of NFC least thing where not anybody in the division is really great.
That's how I feel.
I did watch the Tampa Bay game, and I did watch San Diego. I hate doing that. I did watch the LA Charger game. They played much better against Tampa Bay than they did against the Chargers. I thought the Charger game, being on the road, they started out strong. And one thing I really noticed about the Chargers game in the first half is that Zeke is no longer the guy in Dallas at running back. It's Pollard. Mm-hmm. It's Tony Pollard. That guy is taking his job while he sits. Now, not to say Zeke had a bad game against the Chargers. He had a pretty good game as far as yards. He had a touchdown. I want to say he had somewhere in the realm of around 80 yards. I can look it up. But Pollard was dominant in the first half, and they scored quite right off the bat. They actually got up like 14-3 on the Chargers. But then that was it. Then it just kind of leveled out for them, and they didn't seem to be able to get the ball moving in the second half until the end of the game, when they got the 56-yard field goal from Zuerlein to win it with no time left. So I do like a lot. I'm not saying I like the Cowboys. I'm saying I do think they have a lot of talent on the field. Mm-hmm. How can you not? They have a great offensive line. They have two good running backs. They have pretty good tight ends. I think ours are a little bit better. Mm-hmm. They have CeeDee Lamb and Cooper if he's playing, if he's healthy. And this kid Wilson, who came in for Gallup, was pretty good. On the defensive side of the ball, they got Trayvon Diggs, who's an amazing corner. So that's going to be a challenge. And they've got Van Der Esch, Micah Parsons. They've got a great pass rush. So I think on paper they do match up. Mm-hmm. But, I did watch that game against the Chargers, and I noticed that, like always, now we can debate it. But there were several of those Dallas calls that took place during the Chargers game that were suspect. And it was
suspect, 100%. I think the Chargers got robbed in some instances. Oh, yeah. Pure robbery, pure bias. It was a heavy bias in the calls. You're like, man, did you even think? You know, I'm a nationally certified referee, high school referee, varsity. Right, I am. Right. You know, I took the national, rules tests, all that. You know, I put the stripes on. Right out here in Colorado, high school football. And, it just makes me believe, the calls look so biased. They were, even when you look at it on a replay, you're like, where did you see the call to even make the call in the first place? Like, there's nothing there. So you're like almost anticipating, and it's always third down for the Cowboys. Oh, I got a flag. It's always when they need it the most.
Yeah.
And that's what makes them so glaring, those decisions in that game, man. But, yeah, I'm sure we'll talk about everything going on, the matchups and stuff.
Yes, exactly. The ones that I really noticed in the Chargers game, because this is outside of the realm of the matchups, was they had an offensive PI called against them that would have led to a touchdown because they had a deep ball. It seemed like every time the Chargers had a big play, let's just say that, there was some sort of, and I have never seen in a game, in an NFL game, four offensive penalties on a team after each big play, like I did against the Chargers. And the problem is I watched the full replay, and the replays didn't really show me a lot on the offensive PIs. There was no shove offs. It was just somebody, their flag just ejecting from their pocket as soon as the Chargers had a big play. They had an ineligible downfield. Let me try to say that three times fast. Ineligible downfield in the third quarter that wiped out a big play. They had a holding call that wiped out another big play. And then that ended up leading to an interception in the end zone by Kazee that nullified a Charger drive. And then they had a TD that was late in the game that would have won the game for the Chargers, where it would have won it. And they called an illegal shift. But if you look at the play before the snap, it's very hard to see an illegal shift. So call us Dallas haters, if you will, because we are. I'm not going to lie. We are. That's who we are. We're Eagles fans. But that game, even though I thought the Cowboys looked decent and looked like a good team, they did get the benefit of the those kind of calls. So, and talking about Tony Pollard, 13 carries for Pollard in that game, 109 yards, 8 yards per carry average to Zeke, who was 16 of 71 for 71 yards and a 4 average. That's still not bad. Both of them had a touchdown. So that's the thing that the Eagles are going to have to really look out for. Now, the run game is one thing we've been really good at over the first 2 weeks, both Atlanta and San Francisco. So I think that as far as Ezekiel Elliott goes, we can kind of close that up. But with Pollard, coming out of the backfield, pass out of the backfield, it could be tough. So I wanted to show the meme of the week going into Dallas week. I love this. Somebody sent this to a friend of mine who's a Dallas fan, and so I got bored and decided to watch some of the team's latest Super Bowl wins. And I like how these are all Blu-ray. You got a DVD here. You got the Patriots down there, and then you got the VHS. Because honestly, when have they won anything in the last few years? And I'm so lucky. We're so lucky we won a Super Bowl a few years ago. This wouldn't be as funny to us, you know. So
imagine if they won it. We'd never hear the end of it. So
exactly,
we can celebrate our first one. Jeez.
So that leads us into the key matchups against the Cowboys. And if you notice, yes, I did make their helmet smaller. I did make it much more geographically smaller than our helmet, and that's on purpose. So the key matchups, let's talk about them real quick. Quarterback battle, which is huge in this game. It really all comes down to the guys under center. And we got our boy, who coming off a rough game, he had a good game on his feet, not so much through the air, against Dak Prescott. What do you see here?
I see, as far as veteranness, I'm going to give it to Dak. But just not impressed by Dak. Dak didn't throw a touchdown last week, so they didn't win because of him. You can't come off with no touchdowns and we're patting you on the back. I think he threw a pick as well. So,
he did.
You know, I think when it comes to the QB battle, I'm not sure. You know, Dak is so hit or miss. I think Hurts, I think Hurts just completes the plays that he did that went wrong last week, you know, with the Watkins maybe scoring and Rager not stepping out and rushing the ball in from the 1 yard line. I think we're talking about Hurts having a way better week last week than Dak, and we're a little higher on him coming in 2-0. But I'm going to, matchups, just hard to really tell. But I like Hurts overall. I'm just hoping Dak is a little gun shy from his injury last year, and I'm hoping, that still carries over. But he's been hit or miss. But no TDs last week against a Chargers defense, which I don't know any standouts from there. And you have the receiving core that you have. You have Amari Cooper. You have CeeDee Lamb. Lamb had a good game.
They did.
But everybody else didn't. So that reflects on that. So we'll see, man. We'll see what happens. But what do you think about this, man? Who do you think has the edge with Dak and Hurts?
Well, you're right about Dak Prescott last week. He was 23 of 27 for 237 yards and an interception. And the interception was a bad one. He overthrew his receiver, and it landed right in Asante Samuel Jr.'s hands, who was one of the guys I wanted the Eagles to draft this year so bad. What a great pickup for the Chargers. And Asante Samuel Jr. is having a great rookie season, and he had a great game against Dallas. So that was a bad pick. But 237 yards, I think 80-some of that, let me just double-check. Yeah, 81 yards of that went to CeeDee Lamb. But then you look at the rest of the Cowboys receivers. You got Amari Cooper had 24 yards. Blake Jarwin, the tight end, had 37. He had a decent game, both blocking and clutch over in the middle, but that was about it. Pollard, out of the backfield, had 31 yards on 3 catches, and he was one of the most dangerous ones to watch. Zeke had 26, so, and then you had Dalton Schultz. So other than CeeDee Lamb, there wasn't a lot to look forward to. And we know that Cooper got banged up a little bit, and he's kind of questionable going into this game. We'll talk about that here in a minute. Mm-hmm. So I think the key comes down to what Garoppolo did to us versus what Dak could do. My big thing is I don't think our linebackers are going to be like Jordan Hicks and force him into picks. I think that it's really going to come down to if Slay and Nelson can put themselves in position to make those interceptions, and it will Gannon have them in position to cover these? Because what I see the Cowboys doing a lot is a lot of slants off the line and letting guys like Lamb win these physical battles, and then take the ball down the field that way, and then they occasionally set you up for a bomb. So if our corners can't play on a Cooper and on CeeDee Lamb, then it could be in for a long day. On the Jalen side, it all depends on what he can do with his legs. And I think he's always going to have those there. And if they call a good game and they learn from the mistakes of the San Francisco game and they let him roll out and he can spread the ball around, I think Hurts could have a really big, big game. He's got to stay away. He's got to throw more toward Anthony Brown than to Trayvon Diggs, because Trayvon Diggs is a freaking excellent corner. If he throws, Anthony Brown's a weak link on that defense, so he's got to exploit that. So it all depends on who they have lined up. I would give the slight edge to Dak, though, like you said, because of experience. So let's look at the next part. Again, we talk about the Dallas's wide receivers, Lamb and Cooper, with the asterisk because he's questionable. Again, Slay and Nelson, what do you see here? We got two good corners.
I think this is going to be an incredible matchup, man. I really do. I like our, you know, CeeDee Lamb is dangerous. Cooper is too. Cooper is as well, man. I think this is going to come down to, I know we're doing our DBs, but I think if our front line plays well, I think this Slay and Nelson looks like a genius. But if these guys are free releasing, and we're letting Lamb and Cooper free release, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the point you were making about last week's game, I think if we sit off the ball like we did a lot more often, man, it's hard to catch these guys, man, Lamb and Cooper. If they get behind you one step, two steps, it's over. And Lamb is just dynamic. He's just a dynamic receiver. In his second year, he's caught on very well.
Yeah.
Like I said, 8 catches, 81 yards last week. Cooper had a pedestrian game, and he may have been a little banged up. That could have been the result of it. I think if we can stop Lamb, I think we win that battle between DBs and wide receivers, because we've dealt with Cooper before, and you know, if he kills us, then that's a bad night. But I think if we stop Lamb right now, I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, I think you're right. The CeeDee Lamb is so much to me reminds me of what they had with Dez Bryant when he was there, and he was just dominant with his physical presence. And it's such a shame that when he started to fall off that they were able to pick up a guy like Lamb, because they don't lose a step. And a lot of people thought when they got Amari Cooper from the Raiders that he was going to kind of bring that baggage with him to Dallas, but it's not worked out that way. And so that's a great tandem at wide receiver. I think the Eagles will be there one day. I think we've got a good start with Rager and Smith, but we're not quite there yet as far as dominant as those two guys are. So Slay and Nelson have their work cut out for them. I think as long as the other DBs don't get involved in that and we can keep Slay and Nelson on them, it all depends on how much zone we play against them and give those open spots over the middle. That'll make a big difference. So the next matchup that is key is the Eagles run defense with Graham out versus the Dallas run backs.
Woo! This is where it can get a little serious for us, man. They do have a hell of a combo with Pollard and Zeke. I mean, you talked about it a lot before we got to the key matchup, so I don't want to hammer, you know, the same thing you're saying. You know, Pollard had a hell of a game last week. He outperformed Zeke, but we know they can go back and forth. I think if we stop them from getting out of the backfield with the dips, you know, Dak safety blankets, I think that'll help us out a lot. With our linebackers being suspect, I think that's what hurts our run defense, is our linebackers. Our front four I put our front four in the game against anybody. I really do. I'm a little biased, but Cox and Hargraves in the middle. I mean, who else are you getting that are that much better? We have an all-pro defensive tackle in this, in the up-and-coming. Man, that's really what – that's working really good, man. So I'm scared with this one, man. Scared with this one. This is definitely a concern, because they can break the game open, and this is how they won the game last week. It wasn't because of Dak. It's because of their running backs with two really good games from both of them.
Right, and I think that's a good cause for concern. I think it is one of the Eagles' strengths. The problem is, like we've got listed here with Graham out, where do they go? Well, it's a good thing that we just signed Josh Sweat to a big contract extension, mm-hmm. and that we have Ryan Kerrigan coming off the bench. Both of those guys haven't seen a lot of action this year because of the guys that have been in front of them. I think we're going to see a lot of Sweat and Kerrigan against the Cowboys. If we don't, then there's going to be a problem. One of the things that, like, say, if you look at the San Francisco game, Elijah Mitchell, who was like the hottest guy in fantasy free agency last week, and I said he's kind of like the guy that has like 3 touchdowns and you pick him up off the waiver wire and then he does 4 yards. Well, Elijah Mitchell had 17 carries for 42 yards against the Eagles for a 2.47 average. Jamichael is his name, Hasty, mm-hmm. who came in off the bench for them. He had 38 yards. So one of the things the Eagles have been able to do in the first two games is stop the run. Now, we're talking about Mike Davis, Cordell Patterson, Elijah Mitchell, and Jermichael Hasty, and we're not talking about Tony Pollard and Zeke Elliott. That's a whole other ball game. So they probably have a slight advantage with your front four, like you said. But where I think it's going to hurt them, and I think you're right, is if they do the passes out of the backfield to Pollard. I saw that during the Charger game, and I thought that that was really effective, what the Cowboys got out of that. So that's the thing that I know that that's going to be on the tape that the Eagles look at this week. So it's something that they're going to have to address. You're right.
All right.
And the final matchup is the Eagles, the Eagles versus the Cowboys officials. And that is a key matchup. It is. Like I talked about with the Charger game. It is, especially in AT&T Stadium, when they're at home, they get the home cooking. We saw it, remember years ago, remember when Jordan Hicks recovered the fumble and they said he didn't make a clear recovery when it was on five different cameras from five different angles where he recovered.
Well, I don't remember the play in particular, but I'm tracking.
Yeah, they stripped the ball and they had it was a clear fumble and a clear recovery, but yet the Cowboys officials and everybody was mystified. The refs came out and said, no, it's not a fumble. This was 2 years ago. It's not a clear recovery. And I was like, okay, so I'm expecting that. Every single game in Dallas, I'm expecting that, that little bit of home cooking. I do think that if anybody's going to overcome it, the Eagles with their athleticism at key positions can. Mm-hmm. But it all depends on how bad it gets. Because you know that when we come back here next week, I'm going to be complaining about the officiating. You know I'm going to. Every Dallas game, I always do. So right. That's going to be what it is.
Mm-hmm. As far as matchups, I do want to make just one other point.
Yeah.
Keenan Allen, 108 yards last week on four catches. Mike Williams, 79 yards and a touchdown on seven catches. Austin Eckler, out of the backfield, 9 catches, 61 yards. The week before that, Antonio Brown, 5 catches, 121 yards. Chris Godwin, 9 catches, 105 yards. Gronk, 8 catches. Fournette, 5 catches. Who can the Cowboys stop? And these are serious numbers that we haven't given up to anybody. These are serious numbers when it comes to the Cowboys. So you have Dak not throwing a touchdown. And really, Chargers offense almost got what they want. They just had a lot of bias from the officiating. So if you look at these raw numbers, man, not Eckler with 9 catches? What? Where's Van Der Esch? Where's all these guys that they want to hype up so much? How come you're not stopping a guy from catching 9 balls out of the backfield?
True.
And, you know, they combined for over 20 yards from 2 receivers? Come on.
Yeah.
And I'm not impressed.
Yeah.
Not impressed.
They threw for over 300 yards against the Cowboys defense. So
not impressed.
And it was a lot of big plays. And, again, a lot of their drives were called back because of penalty for some kind of dubious stuff. So we'll see what happens on Monday, how the officiating is, because it will make a difference. I know it will.
When you win, this doesn't look as bad. People don't highlight what Keenan Allen and Mike, how you're off. Are you being scorched? They just go, oh, well, that's Brady.
Yep.
Well, then you go to the Chargers, you got a second-year starter. What are you going to say? Oh, that's a second-year starter. What's your excuse now? So.
Oh, exactly. So that's good. So those are the key matchups for going into Dallas week. Now let's take a quick look at the Eagles injury report. We've got some big ones. There's some minor ones out there, but these are the biggies. Our defensive end, Brandon Graham, is on IR. He's out for the season with an Achilles injury. That stinks. Our right guard, who seems to be often injured lately and on the IR, Brandon Brooks, he's got a strained pectoral muscle. He will miss the game. He is out. We have Zach Ertz, who has not really had a great season up to this point. He's on the reserve COVID list. So what the deal is with him is that he has either a positive COVID test or come in contact with somebody who has COVID. He has been vaccinated, from what I understand. So if he has 2 negative tests prior to Monday, you can play, and it looks like that's going to be the case. There's no confirmation yet because it's only Wednesday, but they feel like that, yeah, he's, even if he was positive, he can, I mean, I don't think he's positive. I think he just came in contact with somebody. That's why he's on the reserve COVID list. So those are the big ones for the Eagles. On the Cowboys side of the ball, it's a little bit more serious. Michael Gallup is on IR. He is out for the game, and that's a big guy for them that provides a lot in the offense, like on that slot receiving, that's really big. But they had a guy, Cedric Wilson, who came in. He only had 2 catches for 20 yards, but they were big catches against the Chargers. So watch for him. He's going to be tiny bit of a problem. Amari Cooper is bruised ribs, questionable right now. That could all change. It's probably likely that he'll end up playing. But you know, bruised ribs is still, it can affect you in a situation. 100%. It's not going to be
easy. You crocodile arms going across the middle.
Yeah. You don't want to take that hit. Lyle Collins, the right tackle, is suspended. So he is out, which is big for the Eagles.
He's out for 5 games, I believe.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. It just started this week. So mm-hmm. that's huge. So that, but they still have a great offensive line. Martin is just one of the best linemen in the league, if not their best player. So they'll still have a good support on the offensive line, but Lyle Collins out. Randy Gregory is on the COVID list, but he's likely to be activated prior to the game. But here's the thing is that when Randy Gregory was out last week, that Micah Parsons just filled in at a defensive end and he just tore it up. So that was one of the things, was that on the regular ground game, that was the one thing they did shut down, the Dallas did, and they did that with their front four. And then DeMarcus Lawrence, this is huge.
That's huge.
Yeah, this is the biggest one. A defensive end for them, broken foot, and he is out for a lengthy bit of time. So that will make a difference when you don't have DeMarcus Lawrence and Randy Gregory, maybe not 100% at those ends coming at you. So that's going to be a big difference.
Yes, sir.
I think we mentioned earlier about Brandon Brooks being out and Graham being out, that as far as the Eagles are concerned, we're going to see a lot of Ryan Kerrigan and see a lot of Josh Sweat. And then on Brandon Brooks' side of the ball, we've got Landon Dickerson, who is the center we drafted out of Alabama. Uh-huh. And then they just signed a guy, I think his name is Jack Anderson, off the Buffalo Bills practice squad as a backup guard. So if that's just really for depth more than anything else. So we signed him to the active roster to back up Landon Dickerson if things don't really work out. So those are the injury reports. And so anything else on the Dallas game before we move into what we got coming up?
No, man, I believe I've said enough. Dallas week is the most exciting week, man. Monday Night Football, I'm excited.
Fly,
let's go.
My only problem with Sunday night and Monday night games is just the anxiety of waiting until Monday night. I get wrapped up. It's hard for me to even watch a regular game on Sunday. I watch them, but I'm just waiting. I'm waiting. And so that, remember last week when I made fun of Carrie Underwood for her the jingle, waiting all day for Sunday night. Now I get it, because now I'm waiting. I'm going to be waiting all Sunday for Monday night, and I don't really even care about the other games. I just want to see the Eagles and Cowboys. That's all it is.
And a lot of people do, man. You know, even if you aren't an Eagles or Cowboys fan, most folks tune in for the rivalry, you know, just in general, just to see those two teams clash. So
it's a big ratings winner. It's huge.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I just hope we show up. And so we're looking at the upcoming games. We looked at this a little bit last week. Once we get out of the Dallas week, this is what we've got to look forward to. We've got Kansas City coming to town at the Link. That is not going to be an easy game, so that'll be entertaining, I'm sure. And then we've got to go to Carolina on October 10th to play the Panthers. And they're a surprise team this year, 2-0 already.
You know, I like the Panthers, man. I have DJ Moore on my fantasy football team. So, you know, you know, when you have a person on your fantasy team, you tend to watch, you tend to peek your eye.
Yeah,
On a game that you would never normally watch at all. So, finding myself watching the Panthers this year and DJ Moore is having a hell of a game. I have Patrick Mahomes, my quarterback, as well for the Chiefs. So, I mean, I don't want him to tear it up when it comes to Philly. Jeez. But it'll be a welcome back for good old Andy. You know, we always love to see Andy Reid come back to the Link, man. But the Panthers are a surprise team, man. And, not necessarily surprised. Well, surprised based off of nobody knew how Darnold would play.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to say. Darnold is a unbelievable surprise to start the year. The game they had against the Saints was incredible. After the Saints did what they did in week one, and the Carolina just handled them. And Darnold had an amazing game. He's had two amazing first 2 weeks of the season. So, yeah, we'll preview those games when they come up. 100%. But this is what we've got looming on the schedule once we get by Dallas. So let's hope we win Monday night and we move on a little bit with a little bit easier breath to be able to take on these two teams. All right. Yeah, I know what you're saying. I know.
Lord Vader.
Yeah. So every week, Tubby and I are in a fantasy league together. And this week, my team, which is called fondly Ertz When I Pee, went up against his team, Lord Vader. And as you can see by the final score, it wasn't even close. 138.6 to 194.22. Were you the highest scorer in the league this week?
Yes, sir.
Well,
yes,
I can imagine. I don't see anybody scoring 100 higher than 194. I think I was highest scorer last week. I was like 180. So yeah, that's incredible. Yeah,
it'll get up there, man. If I just make one swap for Singletary for Smith, man, I'm over 100. That's the only mistake I made. Yeah, I'm over 200, correct. Yeah, that's the only mistake I think I made was that I play anybody but Smith. The players on my bench did a hell of a job, too. But
I know.
Hell of a week, man. You know, Derrick Henry went off. Chris Carson got me some garbage touchdowns, but I'll take them. And, you know, Patty is Patty.
The problem I had was Hurts had a bad game for me. I did bench Miles Sanders at the last minute for Debo Samuel, as my flex, and that did kind of give me 16 points. But we didn't get a lot of production out of the Eagles against the 49ers this week. So I got Hurts with 26.80, so that kind of hurt. So going into the Dallas week, let's briefly talk about who we would start or bench fantasy-wise. Now, you know I have Hurts and I have Miles Sanders. So I will say off the bat, I have to really look at who Samuel is playing if I'm going to bring Sanders in. I just picked up Derek Carr as my quarterback and dropped Matt Ryan because I had him, and I don't need Matt Ryan right now in my life. So Derek Carr's had a first two weeks of the season. So I'm going to be honest with you. Against Dallas, I'm probably going to let Hurts rest for a little bit and see what Derek Carr can give me, because Derek Carr is playing against a non-Tua Miami team. So I think I'm going to go with Carr this week. But and as far as Sanders, it's a toss-up. I right now, he didn't really show anything against the 49ers, so I don't – the Dallas's front seven is kind of tough. I'm going to probably sit him as well. Now, for you, you have Devontae Smith. What do you think about his outlook against the Cowboys this week?
I'm going to sit him just because I want to watch the game and just not even worry about my fantasy football team. I'm just being honest, man. This is more of an emotional pick. I think he's going to have a good game because I think this could be a shootout, especially if CeeDee Lamb, those guys get going. Hurts is going to have to throw the ball, and we know who he likes to throw it to the most right now is Smith. So I expect Smith to get at least 10 targets in this game. So he's hard to bench, but this is just, you know, for just one week out of the year where I use my emotional picks, and it's mainly on the Cowboys when it comes to the Cowboys. So I'm probably going to bench Smith this week. And I got to probably put Tyler Boyd in there.
All right.
Yeah, Tyler Boyd's, I got options.
So. I have Ja'Marr Chase, so I probably will look to move him up into one of the wide receiver spots. I don't know for McLaurin or Metcalf. McLaurin had a great game last week against the Giants, but I don't know if that's going to be consistent. So I'll probably bring in Chase a little bit and keep Debo Samuel, Metcalf, and Chase as my receivers. So yeah, it's going to be a rough week. We'll see how it goes. But yeah, I think as far as the Eagles are concerned, if you got any Eagles on your fantasy team, it's going to be a crazy game against the Cowboys. Unless you've got better options, you may want to give them a rest this week. So that gets us into the picks. Now, every week I host a by spread pick'em game that we have friends of the podcast that are a part of. And so this is the results from last week. Now, the way it works is you get 10 points for a pick against the spread that you get correct. You get minus 10 for a loss, and you get one double, which we call our lock of the week, which is worth 20 points either way, either positive or negative. And as you can see, your boy Lee went plus 60. I went plus 40 in week one. I went plus 60 in week two. And I now have a 60-point lead over second place Doc Goings. After that, we've got tie for third with Tim Case and Dustin Schmidt. Three-way tie for fifth with Darren Muir, Chris Buddy, and Jason Livingston, and then a bunch of other people down from eighth on to the bottom. Mm-hmm. If you want to get your name mentioned on our podcast, you're going to have to be higher than fifth. That's all I'm saying right now. But yeah, it was good. I don't even know what I'm doing right, Tubby. I tell you right now, all I'm doing is kind of throwing darts at the dartboard, and I'm getting lucky. Because and we do we do three college picks every week, and I haven't lost a college pick, so that's been huge that I haven't lost a college football against the spread this year. So 6 for 6 right now. I probably just jinxed it. I'm sure I did, but it is what it is. And the winner at the end of the year gets a whole pot. Everybody puts in $50. So if you're interested in being in the picks game next season, because it's too late to get in for this season, just become a friend of the podcast. Give us a follow on the streaming service of your choice, whether that be Apple Podcast or Stitcher or Audible or Amazon Music or Spotify. We're on all those platforms. Give us a follow. Give us a follow on Twitch or YouTube Live or on Facebook. And we have our Facebook on all those. All you got to do is search Where Eagles Dare Podcast. It's really, really easy. And once you look for those on those platforms, you'll find us. Give us a follow. And then next year, if you want to be in the picks game, you can be up there with the rest of us as well. And maybe get a chance to win some money. It wouldn't hurt to win some money, would it? All right. So that leads us into my picks for week three against the spread. And there are some really, really tough lines. I had to agonize over these picks pretty much all day. My dartboard is filled with holes as I tried to decide what we want. So we're looking at this. I've got Carolina giving 7.5 to Houston. We've got Arizona giving 7 to Jacksonville. We got Tennessee. I'm going to have them giving 5 to Indianapolis at home. I am going to have Baltimore with giving 7.5 to Detroit in Detroit. Then I got a couple of dogs. I got Washington getting 9.5 from Buffalo. I'm going to take Washington. New England, I'm by 3 over New Orleans. I'm going to take New Orleans on the road at New England. Kansas City giving 7 to the Chargers. I'm going to take the Chargers and the 7 points. Atlanta getting 3 at New York, at the New York Giants. I'm going to take Atlanta. Cleveland at home giving 7.5 to Chicago. I'm going to go ahead and take Cleveland beating the Bears, especially since Justin Fields is getting his first start. Pittsburgh giving 4.5 to Cincinnati. Going to go with the Steelers. My double and lock of the week is the Las Vegas Raiders giving 4.5 to the Tua-less Miami Dolphins. That is my lock of the week, and I'm going with Las Vegas at home. Denver at home giving 11 to the Jets. I'm going to take Denver. Tampa getting 1 point on the road at the Rams. I'm going to take the Rams getting the home point. Seattle giving 1.5 at Minnesota. I'm going to take Seattle. Green Bay getting 4 at San Francisco. I'm going to take Green Bay. And here's our pick for the week. I am going to go ahead and take Dallas at home, giving 4 to Philadelphia. I'm sorry. What is your pick on that game, Tubby?
I think it's going to be a close game. I like the Eagles by 3 in that game. Okay. Not really sure of a score, but because there's no telling how the offense can go, it could be an explosive. So I'm not really sure on that. Can't gauge that just yet. It's hard for me to gauge the Eagles' identity. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a close game. I see the Eagles winning by a close game, late field goal.
Sounds good. It sounds good to me. I mean, I would like that. Mm-hmm. The reason I'm taking Dallas is again, their home, the officiating. Right now, not there's a lot of unknowns with the Eagles. I don't know what they're going to do after this loss to the 49ers. Now, we've seen in the past where the Eagles go into AT&T Stadium or into when it was just Arlington, was Texas Stadium, and especially after a loss or when it's a big game like this, they tend to win in Dallas. We've seen it time and time again over the years. They tend to drop games at home, so it seems to be like the road team in this rivalry over the last decade seems to always win on the road. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what I've always noticed. Sure. But I just got to go with the numbers. And just in my head, my gut, maybe it's just the negative Eagles fan in me. I'm going to take Dallas given the 4. I think it's going to be low scoring too. I think it'd be somewhere in the realm of like 24-14, similar to the 49er game where it's not going to be very high scoring, but Dallas might walk away with the win. I hope not. I hope I'm wrong. That's the pick I want to get wrong. For my college, I've got BYU giving 23.5 to South Florida at home. I've got Akron getting 49 points from Ohio State. I couldn't pass that up. Ohio State at home, but they're not playing the best defense this year. So took Akron. And then I've got Kansas State getting 7 from Oklahoma State. So if you're interested in college and somebody who's gone 6-6 this year, in college picks, maybe, you know, maybe you want to take my advice and go for those picks. It couldn't hurt, you know. Although I'm not endorsing, if you get any bets wrong, it's not my fault. I'm not endorsing gambling. If you have a gambling problem and you need to seek help, call 1-800 stop gambling now.
So public service
announcement. That's it. So, you know, hey, it's been a good show. I think this is the longest that we've gone. And you're in a basement with nothing in your house, just a flag and a mic.
Yeah.
Because you're moving.
It's a finished basement, proper basement.
Yeah, but, it's good.
But yeah, man, just condensed down to this one room. You know, ready to move to the new place, get the new studio set up. Yeah, so, you know.
And then we'll be ready to go next week.
Yes, sir.
Hopefully discussing an Eagles win over the Cowboys. We will, regardless of what happens, we will have a lot to talk about next week regarding the Eagles in this game. 100%. Because it is the biggest game of the season so far. It can't get any bigger than Eagles Cowboys. So it's good stuff.
Yes, sir.
I'm excited.
I am too, man. I think, you know, Dallas Cowboys week, how can you not? No matter the record, no matter what's going on, period, between the two teams. Everybody's going to, if you're an Eagles or a Cowboys fan, you're going to tuck in and look hard against the Cowboys, as you should. Yes, sir.
All right. Can you contain the excitement? I don't know. It's like I said, for me, Monday can't come soon enough. I'm ready for it right now. There's so much going on this weekend sports-wise. Mm-hmm. There is. And what sucks as an Eagles fan, I don't care about any of it. I do. But all I want is Monday night.
Yes, sir.
All I want is to see Eagles come out on fire after losing to the 49ers and just tear apart the Dallas Cowboys. Let's go, Birds. You can find the Where Eagles Dare podcast on Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, Audible, Pocket Casts, and iTunes podcast right now. Or you can look us up on Castro. So do that. You see our email right there is lee.bird.eaglesdare@gmail.com. You can also find us on our live stream and our YouTube channel at Where Eagles Dare Podcast, as well as Twitch and Facebook Live. So for Tubby, I am Lee. We will see you next week, hopefully with an Eagles victory over Dallas. And as always, we want to say,
fly, Eagles, fly.
And go, Birds.